Welcome back to another Awareness to Action Enneagram podcast. My name is Creek, and I'm with my long-awaited returning co-hosts, Mario Sikora and Maria Jose Munita. How are we all doing?
Good.
Welcome back.
Good, good. What is this we're doing?
This is the podcast.
This is your last episode, Mario.
Right. Oh, I remember
last
that.
Episode.
My last episode?
Yeah. We just wanted...
You finished.
I've been voted off the island.
Yeah, but we wanted to
saying?
Do that off, I mean, online. Live.
Online.
Yeah, okay. Yes. Yeah, live, yes.
Live.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So how does it feel to be back stateside on your after your inaugural trip to Spain?
My inaugural trip to Spain, yeah. No, it was great. I mean, look, I've been to Madrid
many
times. And
more than what? Say it up.
Yeah. Oh, at least 20. I don't know, but at least 20, sure.
Wow.
But right. Anyway, so what?
What? You
Madrid is my happy place. Look, Madrid is my happy place, and it was great to be there. We did a program on clear thinking in the Enneagram, which was actually a lot of fun. So, and then I got a few days to just chill out, meet with some friends, and, you know, have great meals. And so it was good to be back. And then for my sins, I had to go to Waco, Texas after I got back, which now is actually, you know, a very place. And, you know, so it was fine.
All right.
And now I'm home. So I'm happy to be back with you guys. Although, hey, look, let me tell you, you guys did a great job on the episodes while I was gone.
You.
So, you know, I did listen to them, even though I wasn't able to participate. And you guys did a great job. Lee was a great addition. And it was a podcast I would have listened to, even if I didn't have to. Mm-hmm. So congratulations on that.
You didn't even have to this time. I mean. Okay. Yeah. All right.
It's like watching the nanny cam after you get back. You
know, remember, he's an eight.
You got to go through the video.
Yeah. Yes. All right. So we are finally finishing our walk around the circle of the core qualities. So we're finally getting into core quality at 0.9. And I've had several people be like, when is this core quality happening?
Really?
I've been waiting for nine.
We have hundreds of listeners.
Are they nine? Are they nines who are waiting?
I mean, I guess. I don't know. Yeah. But people have been really looking forward to this. So let's get into this.
And how do you know? How do they approach you, Creek? Do you get, you know, messages by,
was it the,
you know, carrier
so
pigeon? Yeah,
the
nine, you know.
Yeah.
In Nashville.
I only receive communication through Pony Express.
Pony Express, okay.
Yeah, right, yeah. So yeah. It's been a long time coming.
What's Pony Express?
That's how they used to get messages across the country in the Old West when there were no cities. They had a pony relay that they would race back and forth across the country. So it would take weeks to get a letter, you know.
Yeah.
I can imagine.
All right. So we're getting into this core quality of benevolence. I've actually heard a few nines have issue with this word.
Really?
Yeah.
That's a shock.
Yeah.
People having issue with their words that we pick. That's a big surprise. First of all, Maria Jose, what is benevolence in Spanish?
Benevolencia.
Oh, yeah, we
benevolencia.
Have to do that.
Gosh. Go figure.
I feel like Spanish would be a really easy language to learn. I should give it a shot one of these days.
So, look, I don't know. Yeah, after 20 times in Spain, you haven't learned it? Okay.
I can find the bathroom and I can order in a restaurant. So.
And know. After working with me for 14 years, I can pretty much... tell everyone how many words you know and what those are.
It
doesn't go far.
Most of them are inappropriate words.
He just mentioned.
Mm-hmm. Well, Maria Jose, your English is so good that I don't have to learn Spanish. So
yeah.
You know, I was asked the other day.
Classic.
Why?
Classic American.
Why was my English so good? It was pretty awesome.
You said because you got to work with this idiot gringo.
It doesn't. I told that to another gringo, so that didn't go that well.
I would love it if Maria Jose actually had a Philadelphian accent because she spent so much time with you.
Well, I have to say that many times I catch myself saying things in the same way that Mario does, and I'm like, okay, no, stop it.
You know? No.
But he does have an influence on my English. I used to have a more British accent. Yeah.
Really?
I went to a British school. Huh. And then I lived in South Africa, where the English is more British than American. So my English was more, not British, but the accent was. Until he came.
Until the evil influence of the gringo. Yeah.
Yes. All right. So once again, the core qualities are not the same as the strategies, but there is some correlation. So Mario, why don't you just give us a quick reminder of all that?
Yeah. So the when we think about the types, we think about the strategies. Okay. So a nine is a nine because they're striving to feel peaceful more than they are striving to feel the other eight strategies. And so when we think of nine kinds of people, we think in terms of the strategies. But when we think about the core qualities, we think about aspects of each one of us, right? We all experience all the nine core qualities. We all experience the stunting of those core qualities. And however, we feel the stunting of the core quality at our Enneagram point more acutely than we do the other two. So even though we all feel the stunting of benevolence, nines feel it more acutely, along with the core qualities at points six and three, the connecting points.
Marie-José, why don't you give us a rundown of the strategies associated with striving to feel peaceful?
Of course. Nines want to, strive to feel peaceful. They want to have peace, harmony, inner balance inside and outside. And they do things, that they think will secure that for them. The connecting points are point six and three. Point three is the neglected strategy, striving to feel outstanding. They neglected because in some way they distorted, as we saw in the previous episode. They distorted and behaving like a three, doing three-ish things, feels in a way like being arrogant, drawing too much attention, which will not allow me to feel peaceful. It's a risk. On the other hand, you have point six, which is striving to feel secure. And that strategy reinforces their desire to feel peaceful. So it's not like they want to feel secure for security itself, but they, when they mitigate risks, when they take care of the things that may go wrong, it allows them to feel more peaceful. Many times, nines are confused with sixes because of this, because they do want that, but it's for another reason. Now, it is interesting to me that many people from other types that who have other preferred strategies say, well, we all want to feel peaceful at the end of the day. But for them, the quality of that peace has to do more with their preferred strategy. So I feel more peaceful. It's like this feeling of things are okay when I feel outstanding or when I feel perfect. So I want to make that point because it's something that comes up often. And for nines, it's just peaceful for the sake of peace and not, it doesn't have another quality.
Yeah, that's important. And we can say, too, that we all want to feel all the strategies to some degree, right? I mean, who doesn't want to feel connected? Who doesn't want to feel powerful or outstanding or whatever? But there's an acuteness to it, right? It's how much does it matter and how much do we use the strategy that's important. And Marie-José is right. You know, as you were talking, Marie-José, about the commonality of this thing about being peacefulness, it really is. You know, I don't go for this, you know, oh, there are the three core types and then the, you know, six other types, or, there's something about point nine that's more fundamental for all of us than there is for the others. But it really does represent something foundational, this feeling of being okay, right? Of, you know, of kind of reaching some sort of homeostatic equilibrium, right? Okay, things are as they should be, so that's good.
Or as we want them to be.
Or should as we want them to be.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, yeah, and we'll get back to that point because I think it's an important thing as we talk about this core quality.
Are there any sort of misconceptions about nines that we want to address here real quick?
Well, there's a big one, and I think it's related to the core quality, right? Because the core quality, it's benevolentia or benevolence, which, I'm sorry, you know, with these languages, I just, you know, I flip back and forth sometimes without realizing it. So I'm sorry if I occasionally lapse into Spanish, you know, just
speak
bear,
Latin,
just bear
and that's
with
it.
Me.
And you'll save all, I mean.
Wow.
So benevolence means goodwill, right? Or good intention or an inclination toward kindness. And this is often how we see nines, that they're nice people, they're good people, all that sort of thing. But they're not always as nice as we think they are. And, you know, they're usually likable and, you know, for the most part, they're decent, nice people. But they have a way of being able to seem more proactively kind than they actually are and end up appeasing people, right? So, and this is not to denigrate nines, you know, I mean, I have lots of nines in my life and I love them and they're all good people. But there's very often nines are more appeasers than they are, you know, kind of actively expressing goodwill.
What is appeaser?
In this way. Appeaser is just making somebody happy, doing what I have to do to make them happy. Mm-hmm. And very often that just means taking myself out of the picture. Right, kind of removing myself and my needs. So I like to think of it in terms of sometimes it can be more of a suicide than a self-sacrifice. Okay, meaning that, you know, I'm not going out of my way to help you. I'm just going out of my way, right? And you know, staying out of the way to avoid you, right? To avoid upsetting you.
Yes,
because that's a headache.
It's not avoiding the person. It's avoiding certain situations related to that person.
Yes.
I experience nines as very nice people. So I'm just, it's not that they're being actively mean. It's just not. So it's a middle ground. There isn't necessarily a mean or nice duality here.
It can sometimes be. And again, I want to be clear. We're talking about the more dysfunctional aspect of what's happening here. And so it's not all the time. But when nines are kind of fixated, there's almost this, there can be this pseudo niceness that gives the impression of being helpful and kind and proactively thoughtful when it's really just, you know what, if I do this, it'll get you off my back. Right. But again, when they're healthy and, you know, they're very nice people, some of them, most of them.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you never hear, and this is the other thing, you never hear anybody say about nines, oh, I hate that person. Right.
Right.
I can't stand, you know, they don't have any, or rarely, I can't think of any nines that I know or have worked with that had an abrasiveness to them that, you know, alienated people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. So, Marie Jose, what is the core quality at 0.9 and how do you define it?
So, the core quality at 0.9 is benevolence or benevolentia. Now, it's a bilingual podcast, this one.
There you go.
And it is basic goodness, the absence of ill intent, the presence of goodwill toward others. And I know, and I think you mentioned it maybe before we started recording, Craig, how some nines do not resonate with this. Because, I mean, how it's not so obvious that that's what gets stunted and that's what they are not even wanting, but what they would benefit from nurturing. But as with all core qualities, it is not something that it's not something in our awareness so much. We act as a reaction of the lack of this or the immaturity of this, but we're not aware of this all the time.
Yeah, and you know, we define the immature version as the lack of ill will. Okay, so even when it's stunted, it's not like it becomes ill will toward other people,
yeah.
Right? It just doesn't go from being the lack of ill will to an active, proactive, thoughtful, mature goodwill. Mm. Okay, and you know, one of the things about goodwill and good intention is that you're doing what is right for the person rather than just what they want. Okay, so we think about raising children. And, you know, there are things that we have to do for our children that they don't want, right? I mean, we have to feed them vegetables, right? We have to have them, you know, limit their time on the computer or on their phones or, you know, and they don't want that. But it's an act of goodwill to put boundaries on them, to, you know, sometimes have them do things that are unpleasant for them for their own benefit, okay? So, and this is where nines can struggle, right? I don't want to, you know, be the enforcer. I don't want to set limits. I don't want to do those things because it brings up conflict and so forth. So again, we're not saying that nines aren't nice people. We're not saying that they're not, you know, that they have hostility toward anybody or anything like that. We're saying that they struggle to take those steps that are the indicators of mature benevolence rather than just the lack of ill intention.
I kind of disappear. I don't want to be a burden. Yes. I don't want to be a problem. Yes. But it doesn't mean that I'm going to actively create a good environment or create peace around me.
So one of the things that I've heard from nines is benevolence feels weak. There almost needs to be a moment where it's like, I need to recognize that I am a person and that I do need to charge for what I do. Like, I do need to sincerely value my contribution.
Of course.
Yeah.
And that's the mature version that we're talking about, right? We're not saying, again, the problem that nines have is they fall into devaluing themselves, right? And that's not benevolence, okay? That is the suicide that I mentioned. Okay, so that's exactly the problem. I am going to devalue myself so I stay out of your way so that you don't get angry at me. Mature benevolence treats everybody. And it's like we've talked about with all of these things, they have to be directed to ourselves as well. Okay, so it's recognizing, you know, that the good intention in me and expecting the good intention in others as well, and that includes, you know, valuing me for, you know, what I'm worth. Mm-hmm. So that's that example you gave is an example of exactly what we're talking about.
Yeah. So it's I think, at least for me, when the word benevolence comes into mind, it just makes me think of this like old friar in the middle of the country that's just ho-hum making barley beer or something and just Santa Claus. I think of Santa Claus.
Yeah. Wow.
And I think a lot of nines need to recognize that they can be forceful and they can be strong. And benevolence doesn't capture that sort of strength that I think a lot of nines need to embody.
Because other core qualities do, right? Mm-hmm. Value does. Okay. Vitality does. Okay. Now, none of these core qualities are complete in and of themselves, which is why there are nine of them. Mm-hmm. So yeah. Okay, fine. So compassion doesn't imply, you know, taking care of myself and putting my needs ahead and all that sort of stuff too. Okay. But that's just because that's not what we're talking about here.
Mm-hmm. Even objectivity,
you know? So,
when you think about objectivity, it could be something like just how I look at the world, and it doesn't necessarily involve action or strength. It's like a mental strength. So, yeah, they complement each other.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. I guess as you, would it be true, if as you work on benevolence, there's a point of being benevolent to self.
Exactly.
That is, I have goodwill towards myself, and part of that goodwill is valuing my contribution and showing up in the world in a forceful way.
Absolutely right. And, you know, it's directed at oneself. And what mature benevolence does is it recognizes the needs of all parties equally, right? And you know, and so, again, what happens when the nine is not experiencing benevolence is that they take themselves and their importance and their values out of the picture, and they appease others, and then they end up getting pissed off because they're not being appreciated, and then they start, you know, demanding that their needs get met, and then they start feeling shame for that, and they repeat the whole cycle, okay? But when you start developing mature benevolence, you realize that I, you know, have to have one of the things too about benevolence we haven't talked about. It's this recognition, again, because all these core qualities have to do not just with us, but a kind of a perception of how the world works. And when I was looking at the literature on, you know, the other people talk about the essential aspects, you know, the quality of love gets brought up, and this non-dual love, that the universe is a loving place and all that sort of stuff. And we can get into why I don't use that language in a moment. But the idea is that it is about not just me, but about a perception of how the world is. And we have to, you know, again, look at it ourselves. We have to say, okay, how can I maximize benevolence so that everybody's happy, right? Everybody's content. Everybody feels taken care of, not just you, not just me, right? That we're not competing, you know, that there's only, you know, it is an abundance mindset, right? I can give to you without feeling like I'm losing myself. And that's the message for the nine.
Mm. I'm not sure. I mean, maybe you've said it and I just never heard it before, but I'm not sure I've ever heard y'all articulate all of these are necessary. None of them solve every problem. Like that, all there are all nine of them, and you need, obviously there's one in particular that you need to focus on for growth. But just if I just stay in that sort of individuality, I cut myself off.
Yeah. Well, I think we've made this point. Go ahead.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I think we've made it. It's just hard to grasp or to kind of integrate it. But for example, with the nine, I think I don't want to say damage, but the cost of having benevolence stunted is that they withdraw, they try to disappear, they do not engage with the world in a way that it's more active or that shows their value. And it's so, so hard to separate benevolence from value, and because they go together. But also, if I'm hiding, if I'm trying to disappear, I will not nurture or display compassion, nor, I mean, most of the other things. So for the nine, the stunting of benevolence is kind of the key to not being able to connect or develop the other core qualities. Once you develop benevolence, you can start nurturing the others more easily. But you need them all.
Yeah.
But it's the key to kind of accessing them.
Again, I'm sure you've said this, but it just clicked in a different way for me.
You know, when we talk about the core qualities, we talk about them as nine characteristics of each one of us, right? Nine aspects of each one of us. Whereas we don't say the same thing with the strategies, okay? We don't, you know, we don't think that, you know, me as an eight, you know, would gain a whole lot of benefit from working on getting better at striving to feel unique.
It's
kind of irrelevant, if at all, right? You know, but for you it would, because that's your issue, right? But when it comes to the core qualities, we start with working on our own and the two connecting points, and what that does is it's kind of like undoes the log jam, right? And everything starts to flow again, and you know, whenever you're undoing a jam, you've got to get that right point, you know, and when you get that right point, then everything starts breaking up faster.
That makes sense. Okay. Yeah.
Right. So this is what the core qualities are all about.
No idea what you're talking about here.
Man. What? Well, you know, when there's a jam in a river, you know, logs gather.
Okay.
And, you know.
Okay. Get it now.
Yeah. So I don't know what that would be in Spanish.
Doesn't matter. I get it now.
You know, but you find that right you find that right log to move, right? And then all of a sudden you start getting a whole lot of movements.
Mm-hmm. It's mm-hmm. interesting because as a one, objectivity for me is the key to kind of unlocking the others. Yeah. I can feel more compassion when I'm more objective. I can feel more powerful when I'm more objective. I can feel more peaceful when I'm more objective. So I don't need to work on all of them, because I know that once I work on that one, and maybe individuality and joy, but even without those, with objectivity, all the others kind of start developing naturally.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That makes sense. Yeah. So, okay. So what I'm hearing, it's about expanding the story of benevolence or really any of the core qualities that you seem to have an issue with. It's like everything, we need to expand the definition, expand the story of what that means.
Yeah. Well, let's see. No. So we prefer to talk about expanding the story of the strategy. Right. Okay. The tricky thing about the core qualities is that, you know, you can't force them to grow. You can only create circumstances in which they will start to mature again. And we use the analogy of the acorn and the oak tree all the time. Right. You think of the core qualities as this acorn that has the potential to grow into an oak tree, but you can't pull on a sapling to make it grow, right? It has to kind of follow its own course, right? And so what you can do is provide the right environment through a variety of exercises. You know, if we stick with the analogy of the tree, you got to fertilize it, you got to give it water, you got to make sure it has enough sunlight. And with these things, in order to get the core qualities to grow, we need to work with the strategy. Okay? We need to keep redefining what it means to be peaceful. And we have to practice the accelerators. Okay? And what those things do is create an environment where the feeling of benevolence can start to come forward, because it doesn't feel threatened or shamed.
And if you expand the definition of the strategy, that can also nurture the core quality, because it starts kind of getting closer to it. So I will not feel more peaceful if I shut up during the meetings. So if I share what I think, I'll feel more peaceful. If I do this, I'll feel more peaceful in the long term. And that starts making more flexible, more adaptive, but also getting closer to feeling the benevolence. It's another way of nurturing the core quality, but it's expanding definition of the strategy, not necessarily of the core quality.
That makes sense.
Yeah, because benevolence is what it is, right? You really can't redefine it.
Sure. I'm just thinking about those that don't initially connect with their core quality. It's like re-explaining it. It's like, actually, you do connect with it. We just need to explain it a little bit more.
And the reason is because it's stunted. They have shame around it. And their definition of the strategy is distorting their understanding of what it really is.
Mm.
Right? And, you know, because if your nine friend was not, you know, wrestling with their inability to value themselves, which is, again, a result of the stunting of benevolence and vitality, and they didn't have all these distorted ideas of what it means to be peaceful in ways that said, well, in order to be peaceful, I have to devalue myself, then they would be able to see what benevolence really is. Mm-hmm. And this is the problem we all have. The eight struggles to see what vitality really is, because they misinterpret it as something else, right? Their definition of the strategy makes it seem like something it's not. And the same thing with ones, right? They can't see what objectivity really is, because they've stunted it. They feel shame about it. And their definition of what it means to be perfect makes it difficult for them to see the real thing.
Yeah, and maybe you said it, and I'm just saying it with other words, but if you're trying so hard to find that, but it in the wrong way, you think you have it, you know? So Yeah. You don't resonate with the lack of it, with the stunting of it.
Yes.
Because if you tell me as a one, I mean, what you need is objectivity. Well, I think I see the world as it is, you know, and don't take that away from me. If I'm a nine and I'm striving to feel peaceful, I see myself as a good person. And so don't tell me that what I'm missing, I'm lacking, is benevolence. So it's counterintuitive. We spend most of our lives trying to compensate for the stunting of it, but in a way that it's not that effective and that does not deeply solve that need.
Yeah, and in fact, if we have a if it's stunted in us and our definition of the strategy is distorted in the way that they usually can be, then we have a distorted definition of what the core quality is, and we think we possess it, or we think the way to it is some other way. So with the one, for the example, oh, my problem is not that I'm not objective. It's that I'm too objective and I'm not in touch with my emotions and I don't have fun. And so, you know, I need to go down to the hotel by the airport.
Come on.
And, you know, all these sort of things, right?
With an eight ball.
So, you know, and with the eight, they think, what do you mean I'm not vital? You know, man, I'll drink you under the table.
That's the one thing I am. That's the one thing.
Exactly. That's, you know, that's what I am. Mm. But no, they're not, because they don't know what the thing really is. Okay. They know the substitute for it. They know the artificial version, and they think that's the real thing. And that's the problem.
I think we're nailing this episode because it's clicking a lot better for me.
Finally.
You need to go to Spain more often.
I needed 3 weeks to clear my head.
Yeah. So we see in a lot of the other literature, the essential aspects are how other people define this sort of same thing that you're trying to get at. How would you differentiate what you're saying versus what some of the other literature is saying?
So the big challenge with the other literature, you know, which kind of got me to thinking about this whole thing many, many years ago, was the metaphysical assumptions behind the essential aspects. And we've beaten that horse to death, so I'm not going to get into it.
Right. Well, I'm curious real quick. Is nine where you were like, wait a second, there's something here, but it's not this? Is the, just the origin of
no,
this
it was,
whole
it
thing?
No, it was all of them. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
It was reading...
Almas or what?
It was reading Sandra Maitrey
years
ago, before Almas started writing about this stuff. Yeah, okay. But she got it from Almas.
Sure. Know.
So in the literature that talks about the essential aspects, you know, if you think of Almas or Sandra Maitrey's work, they have a metaphysical assumption about this, and that at point nine, they talk about love as the quality, but they talk about it as a quality of the universe, that one of the essential aspects of the universe is this non-dual love, right? The, you know, the universe is love. It loves us. That's why we have oxygen to breathe and water to drink and, you know, stew to eat. I always wrestle with love as something to strive for from a spiritual perspective, because it's one of those words like spiritual that has many different meanings to many different people, right? One of my favorite all-time stories is Raymond Carver's story, What We Talk About When We Talk About Love. And it's four people sitting, you know, on a kitchen table talking about what true love really is. And can somebody who, you know, acts violent toward the person that they love because she's leaving him, you know, is that a sign of love or what? But anyway, but we can get into these conversations about what is love. And everybody's got their own definition. And there's romantic love, and there's love of our children. And the Greeks have four or five different kinds of love that they talk about. So love is a fuzzy term to me. Right. So in that regard, I don't like to use it as this. And it also, the literature has this kind of assumption that it's this, you know, non-dual union with the universe that is the core thing at point nine. And I just don't see that. Right. I mean, I just don't see that in Well, I'm not really sure, but it's this idea of, you know, merging into the universe and experiencing non-duality and oneness with everything that is, okay? That's a pretty big step as far as I'm concerned, okay? Now, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I've dabbled in that school of thought, and I think the thing that I've found in it is really the thing I took away from it is more experiential in nature and rather than an actual thing, an experience of focusing. It's just being present on some level. It's just accepting what is, understanding, experiencing life as it is, basically.
I was trying to feel that, and is it any different from feeling part of the world? You know, that I'm here, that you're there, seeing you, marveling at what's around me and what we, sure. You know, is that, do we have to put that name, like non-dual love for it? It's, to me, it's...
Sure. I get it. It's also feeling connected to something larger. It's a lot of what we're talking about here, but yeah, it is, it does feel a little overdone,
yes.
To a certain extent, but it is describing a legitimate experience.
Yeah, but yeah. Well, anyway, I don't want to go off track criticizing that, but it's why using such kind of pretentious names for something that it's very simple.
First of all, I completely agree with you there, Maria Jose. I mean, anytime I feel like I'm supposed to hear angels singing in the gentle plucking of the strings of cherub harps, I get really irritated, you know. And so why not just have simple language? But to the point, whenever we over-spiritualize something, in my experience, it takes us out of the day-to-day living and engagement with people. So whenever I hear people talking about these things, they're very often off in a corner experiencing these things by themselves. And then when they go back into the real world, it's not on the ground and it's not applicable. What we're talking about here, the highest part of benevolence, is, like Maria Jose said, we feel part of something bigger. We feel connected to things without losing ourselves, without losing our perspective, without losing a sense of that, yeah, I'm here on the ground as well, right? I see you, I recognize you, I understand that we're part of this, you know, Indra's web of connection of all that is in the world, but I haven't lost my sense of who I am, and I still know that I got to get up and make lunch in a few minutes, right? So for me, that's what benevolence is.
And I'm an active part. I play a role. I add to this whole, and I don't need to disappear in order for things to be okay.
I do want to just go back real quick. Mara, you said when we over-spiritualize something and just kind of, again, spirituality means a lot of things to a lot of different people. What I'm hearing is when we assume something is objective that is actually more subjective.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. That's a good aspect of that, sure. And also just an idealization of something in our minds rather than the actual experience of something. And yeah, when we create this ideal version of something that then becomes not practical and not useful and not something we can carry back into the real world with us.
And also it feels like it's for those who have been selected, you know, for those special ones. And this is something that anybody can feel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. One of the teachers that I've engaged in before that talks about non-duality and that sort of thing is Rupert Spira. Now, I don't agree with everything that he says, but I think that it's the best version I've found, where it is not uppity. It's like everyone can experience this sense of connectedness, this sense of belonging, this sense of I am here and who's the I that's looking, who's observing, and just experiencing that sort of internal state of calm of this is what it is, and I'm still okay. Yeah, but as soon as it makes it into culty guru-ness, that's when it gets really nasty.
Yes. Yes.
All right, MJ, Maria Jose, Munita, what does this core quality feel like?
It's funny because I have the notes and I have what Mario thinks it feels like, and to me, it's a bit different. So I'll share what I think it feels like, and he can share his.
Feels like non-duality, non-dual consciousness.
Yes, yeah. It does.
That's what you think.
It
yeah.
Is. I do feel like it is something where there's these energy flowing, but I necessarily am part of something bigger, you know, like it's coming in and out, but it's kind of moving in between and across people or things, but especially people, really. And it's hard for me to separate this, as I said before, from value, because it's like it is this thing where I can shine, but everybody else is shining, you know? It's not just me who is creating or giving light to other people, but we're sharing it, you know, but I'm shining too. That's how it feels for me.
Yeah. So I would put a slight twist or nuance on that, in that I am connected to something bigger. Mm-hmm. I am connected to the rest. And the benevolence piece of this is almost like I am also transmitting it to you. Okay, and I am expressing it to you. And what I put in the notes there, it feels like a great big hug, right, for somebody who needs it. So when the nine is in this space of benevolence, they're recognizing, I have this capacity for goodness. I have this capacity for being present. I have this capacity for feeling like part of something bigger. And I'm sharing it with you, okay? So it's not just what I'm feeling, but it's what I'm putting out into the world, okay? So it's almost like somebody who, you know, has this peace, this energy, this kindness, who is just then enveloping somebody else and sharing it with them. So that's what I had in the notes there. So yeah, I agree, Maria Jose. It's about being connected to something. But it's also, I think, about being a channel for that as well for other people. Because part of being connected to everything means being connected to the people who need to feel that connection, to the people who need to feel love, people who need to feel compassion, right? People who need to feel support. And that's what benevolence allows us and enables us to do.
And as I'm thinking through, like, even like the connecting points of value and confidence, like when I think of what benevolence feels like, when it's when I feel like I don't have to reserve anything for myself, that I like there's more than enough to go around, right. And not only do I have something to contribute, but I am confident in the thing that I am contributing. And I want to give it away, and I'm not afraid of it, of running out of it, to a certain extent. I mean, I am a limited human, but
yeah, and you can share your wisdom with people without feeling like you're going to run out of it, right? Mm-hmm. So you're absolutely right, and this is, you know, the accelerator for point nine is generativity. Okay, and so generativity, and we probably talked about this with the three and the six episodes, but it's this idea of I have something of value to share for which I expect nothing in return, because I need nothing in return. The term generativity comes from Eric Erickson, who the psychologist who spoke about life stages, and he talked about the grandparenting stage being you know, the stage of generativity. The grandparent doesn't need anything from the child. They don't even need their obedience or their affection or anything like that, like the parent does. The parent needs the child to behave themselves, to clean up after themselves, all these sort of things. The grandparent just goes and gives love and then goes away, okay? Or goes and it gives kindness and wisdom and then goes away without expecting anything in return. Nine start to grow when they realize that they have something of value. Okay, this is the big problem with nines. They don't feel like they have anything of value to give. Okay, so they undermine their value and they don't ask for enough money and, you know, whatever it is. But when they start to realize, oh, wait a minute, I do have value. I deserve to get paid for my work. But there are people to whom I can share without expecting any kind of recompense, right? And so we encourage nines to find something they can do to be generative and help other people grow without expecting anything in return. And what this does is it reminds the nine, oh, wait a minute, I do have this well of resources to share. And it doesn't diminish me in any way to share them with others.
And I think that what you just said is kind of the key to why they don't share necessarily when it's not mature. It's not, I think, so much that I don't want to run out of it, but I don't think I have it.
Right, and, exactly.
And that connects with value and with confidence, with the two core qualities at the connecting points. So evidence as a accelerator for point six is something that can help build that confidence and purpose. Yes. The accelerator for point three can also help build value. And then at the end of the day, the sense of benevolence. So it's like, do I have it more than do I have enough? I think with the fear that I'll run out of it, it's, is there anything to give? Or if I give it, will people think that I'm too arrogant or that I'm too, think too much of myself when I'm not that valuable or that benevolent?
That's a really helpful distinction for me, because like, I think, and it's a good point, how I was describing it is very much from a four perspective. Is like, I rarely doubt that I have something to offer. I more doubt, will other people see the value that I see? And then do I want to risk them not seeing the value? But I rarely doubt that I don't have something unique to offer a situation. But will others
agree?
Whereas
the nine does. Yeah, the nine does. They really question, well, who would think what I have to say is important?
And right? You would not believe how many nines think that way. Like, why would I even talk if everything I think was already said?
I hear nines all the time in, you know, who are very senior people very often. They'll be in a staff meeting and they won't say anything. They won't contribute to the conversation because they think, oh, I don't want to be just that person who's saying something just to have my voice heard.
Or repeat everything that was already said.
Right. And so I say, but don't. Because what always happens is they walk out and they say, oh, man, I should have said this or I should have said that. Because they realize that they had something to say and they didn't. And the group is worse off for it, for them not making their contribution. But they didn't trust that what they had was of value.
Without realizing that people go away thinking they don't have anything to say at all, which is even less valuable.
Right. Right. Well, and that's another thing. I mean, I've heard, you know, there have been times when, you know, I've been working with groups and, you know, the CEO or somebody, you know, the board members will say, why is that person in the room? I mean, why are they even here? They never say anything. They never contribute anything. Why are they here? And so it becomes this self-fulfilling prophecy when you think you don't have something to contribute. So you don't contribute anything. And then people start believing you and say, well, clearly doesn't have anything to contribute. So
yeah, or there's an assumption made that they lack initiative or desire to help or just oblivious right. to we're trying to do this thing and they aren't showing up in a way that you expect someone to show up. And it's not right. it's from a place of I don't know if I can do anything.
Right.
Not from a you guys do all the work.
Right.
I think what we just mentioned is something so common with these kind of leaders, and not only leaders, with people who don't voice their thoughts. And it has a big cost. And it creates anything but peace inside because they go away troubled because they haven't said anything. Or for other reasons, but they don't go away feeling peaceful. And understanding that they have to voice what they think because it's their job. I mean, it is expected of them. But also because even saying, I agree, it's stating something. It's sending a message. It's supporting a cause or a decision. And I know that this is not just for business, but finding someone to mentor. Because generativity sounds like maybe a bit abstract, and I can see it in like with grandparents and children, but finding someone to mentor, finding someone to help, adding value, giving the gifts or the skills that I have, is a way to build that confidence, and it's a way to start seeing that I can add value to the world and start charging for it or start expecting something in return, that it's fair and feel more benevolent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, what you said a few seconds ago, Maria Jose, is really important. And it ties me back to my frustration with this abstract, non-dual, you know, be part of everything. Being part of the broader thing means understanding not only your connection to something bigger, but your responsibility is part of that bigger thing, right? Mm. And so when you're, you know, when I see these nines who are on these spiritual quests for non-dual, you know, realization, but they're not doing the basic work of contributing to a staff meeting, right? Or a common project. Well, that's, you know, you're missing the whole point, because the part of being bigger, being part of something bigger than yourself, is recognizing your part and responsibility within it and fulfilling that.
Understanding your significance and weight on the world, both positively and negatively,
yes,
is required. And,
yes, and the responsibility for engagement that comes along with that.
Yeah, because it's not just that I feel committed. I need to show that I'm committed. I need to engage. And that's active. And people will not read my mind.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So nines have to get off the cushion and get into the world. Mm-hmm. You know, is really what it comes down to very often.
Yeah. I love that. All right. So this is we've wrapped up the core qualities.
So we're done. So adios, folks. We're out of here.
No, we have more to say, I'm sure.
Always we do. Always
we're working on what's next.
We'll think of something.
Yeah. But how should we wrap up this sort of walk around the circle?
While you think about it, I'll remind people that we have a workshop coming up in Nashville at the end of April. And what's the website, Mario? Subtypesworkshop.com?
Subtypesworkshop.com.
Yeah, I got it. So we still have a few spots left. It will be really, really fun and useful. I don't think there are better descriptions of the 27 subtypes than ours. So join us.
You don't think?
I know.
Also, let's mention the certification program coming up too. The next round of live sessions starts on May the 6th, EnneagramOnDemand.com. So reach out to us if you're interested in the foundation program certification.
And I'll just say once again, me and Lee just got off of another Zoom call with some of the participants of this last module, and so many of them just found it insanely useful, and their clients and businesses that they're teaching this stuff to they're just simplifying and defining their terms goes a long ways. So so the question to wrap this up is, I was hoping it would come to me before I reached the end of that.
How do I become enlightened?
Yeah.
I think that the whole episode was a way of wrapping up these episodes of the core qualities. I think that understanding that we would benefit from nurturing all of the 9 core qualities, but paying attention to the core kind of 3, our preferred, this core quality at our preferred strategies point and the 2 connecting points. And that's kind of the way in which we can access all of them naturally, but working on 1 or those 3.
Yeah. And I think an analogy I've been using recently is, and it works on a lot of levels, but you're a garden, not an engine, not a machine. The patience, I guess, is required, and we can't make these things happen. We just have to wake up and do the small little things day after day to take us where we want to go.
Yeah, I'm glad you added that last part, because it is patience, but it's also consistent work, right? I mean, you know, none of these things are easy, right? Everybody wants to, you know, everybody wants a pill for enlightenment. Everybody wants, you know, make all my troubles go away in a 3-hour workshop, and, you know, I'd love to, but it's not how the world works. And it's important when understanding these core qualities is that they're not just something that if we get rid of the ego, they will spring forth fully developed and everything will be great. Okay. First of all, the next person to get rid of the ego will be the first. Okay. So stop even talking about that, right? It ain't going to happen. There is no true self, false self. And if you get rid of the false self, the true self comes forward and it's perfect and fully formed. No, these things, like those things in the garden, take time to grow. And they require water and soil and tending. And if you do that work, you will grow. And in time, you will realize, hey, wait a minute, my life is really, really different than it used to be. Okay. And that's the mindset you have to have with these things. Take your head out of the clouds, get into the dirt of the garden, and it will start showing fruit.
That's great. That's great. I think it'd be a great thing for the next, eventually, when we get enough questions from our audience, to do some sort of Q&A. Because we've dropped a lot of things over the past 80-something episodes. And would love to do a few episodes where we're doing some Q&A. So
send us questions.
Send us question, just to your email, Mario, or where should they be sending their questions?
You can send them to info@awarenesstoaction.com.
Perfect. Awesome. Well, thank you all. We'll talk to you next week.
Cheers.
So long.
Thanks for listening to the Awareness to Action Enneagram podcast. If you're interested in more information or talking to Mario, MJ, or myself, feel free to reach out to us through the links in the show notes or by emailing info@awarenesstoaction.com. All episode transcriptions and further information can be found at awarenesstoaction.com/podcast.